In January of 2001, Governor Roy Barnes decided it was time to do something about a divisive remnant from Georgia's past, the Confederate battle emblem that was emblazoned on the state flag. Barnes knew he'd have a fight on his hands. Business and civic leaders wanted the flag changed, and so did the Georgians who saw the flag as a symbol of the state slave past. But Barnes knew there'd be fierce resistance from those who were determined to honor the history of the Confederacy. Making the change would require skilled political maneuvering. And so Barnes and a small group of insiders plotted quietly about how to win their fight in the weeks leading up to the 2001 session. Over the years since, Barnes has told bits and pieces of the story about how he won the battle, but we asked him to sit down with us and tell it in full. We recorded our show in late June of 2015, just 2 weeks after the tragic massacre at the Mother Emanuel AME Church in Charleston. As the controversy over Confederate memorials rages once again today, we thought this was a good time to revisit the conversation with Governor Barnes. We began by playing an excerpt from the powerful speech he delivered from the well of the State House on the day he announced his plan to change the flag.
I am a Southerner. My wife is named Mayree. I like collard greens with fried streakaline, catfish, tails and all, fried green tomatoes and cathead biscuits and red-eye gravy. My heart swells with pride when I see a football game on a crisp fall Saturday. I still cry when I hear Amazing Grace. My great-grandfather was captured at Vicksburg fighting for the Confederacy, and I still visit his grave in the foothills of Gilmer County. I'm proud of it, but I'm also proud that we have come so far that my children find it hard to believe that we ever had segregated schools or water fountains labeled white and colored. And I am proud that these changes came about because unity prevailed over division. Today, that same effort of energy of unity must be exercised again.
That is former Georgia Governor Roy Barnes, January 24th, 2001. Governor Barnes, it's really an honor and a pleasure to have you here to talk about the flag, the Georgia flag, and then to talk about what's happening in the political world around us in response to Charleston. So thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
And also today we're going to be joined by Jim Galloway, the political writer for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Governor Barnes, let's start by going back a little bit. So let's go back to the State of the State speech in 1993, Governor Zell Miller's State of the State speech, because it was there that, for the first time, a governor staked his reputation on trying to change the Georgia flag. You were at that point in the legislature.
I was a member of the House.
Right. You were a member of the House, and so you were there on the day that Zell Miller gave that speech, yes?
Yes, I was.
You want to listen to a moment of it?
Yeah, it's been a while.
Let's listen and then we'll talk about it.
We now proudly send our sons and even our daughters abroad to defend the United States of America. Yet we maintain as a symbol of our state a flag that challenges the very existence of the United States of America, and a flag that exhibits pride in the enslavement of many of our ancestors. This one vote will be the only vote for which this General Assembly is ever remembered.
Governor, you were a representative from Mableton in Cobb County at that point. What do you recall sitting there thinking as you listened to Zell Miller talk?
Well, I thought he was committing political suicide at the time, and he had a very close race the next year, if you remember. He pushed it in 93. It didn't go anywhere. And really by 94, he was running for re-election and he had another agenda. and the matter never arose again during the time he was governor.
I don't think it even made it out of committee, did it?
It did not. It did not. And I learned some things from that. One is, this has been discussed for so long. Everybody knows where they are.
Well, it's interesting that you were representing voters in Mableton at the time, constituents in
yes.
Mableton. I think it's safe to say a conservative part of Georgia. So I wonder, as you first in 93 heard Zell Miller talk about this, whether you were thinking about how your constituents were going to react to his speech.
Well, remember, I had run for governor in 1990, and Zell Miller had defeated me. And I was out for 2 years, and then I ran for the House. And I went down when I first was elected to the House to see Governor Miller, and I told him, I said, I'm not here to cause you problems. And I said, I want you to know that. And I said, whatever you need me to vote for, you don't even have to call me. You let me know. And he asked me then. He says, does that include the flag? And I said, yes. I said, now, it's dangerous for both of us. But I said, yes.
That's fascinating. I never heard the story that Governor Barnes, as a representative, was committed to voting for the flag. Should it have come to the floor?
No, and you were on the floor during the speech.
Yes.
I watched it on video last week, and I was just – what struck me was the silence from lawmakers.
Yeah. Yeah. It was – you could have heard a pin drop. And I learned something else from that. Governor Miller really – you know, he almost called names in that speech. I haven't heard it. That's the first time I've heard it. I listened to a little bit of it when Jim posted it last week. But he almost called names. He said, you know who you are. By the time we got ready to pick it to pass it, I'd also learned you can't shame folks into it. You have to ask them to rise above it. And also you have to make a good case. And so in the speech that I gave that you just played an excerpt from, you know, it went on to say this is has to be done for business reasons. This has to be done for other reasons. They were wrong, but that doesn't really matter. And so we built a good business case. I mean, I looked at the speech. I wrote that speech. And I kept it very close to me, and I looked at it as a closing argument to a jury. This is what I've proved. This is it. You have to follow this through. And, of course, that's because of my training. I will tell you a little side note.
Your work as a country lawyer?
Country lawyer. I'll tell you a little side note. I kept that speech, and I'd work on it from time to time. I kept it in my pocket. And we were down at the King celebrations. And I had called and asked that they not get into the flag because I knew I was going to take it up the next week. But two things happened there. One is I was after that ceremony goes on for a while. And so as everybody was talking, I was sitting there kind of reading this speech that you just heard and working on it. Well, Michael Thurman was reading over my shoulder. I didn't know it. And he leaned up.
Michael Thurman, who at that time was in the legislature, an African-American from Athens.
Yes. And so he leaned up and he whispered, he says, if you give that speech here, they're going to take the roof off the building. But another thing, that Jack Kemp came and was the speaker that year. And he, not getting the memo, he got up and talked about how we should change his flag. And I called him out in the parking lot, and I said, Mr. Secretary, I said, did you mean what you believe in there? I mean, believe what you said in there? And he said, yes. I said, give me your cell number. So the next week on the Sunday, I remember it was a Super Bowl Sunday, I called him. I think they were in Tampa. And I said, let me tell you what we're going to do. We're going to change the flag next week, and I need you to come up here and talk to some of these Republicans and that are fighting. And he did. And Jack, I got to be very fond of Jack Kemp. Yeah. I mean, you know, he was very good. And I remember the message he told him. It was This is a civil, just what Zell said, this is a civil rights vote. This is all you're going to be remembered for. And remember this, he said, we're the party of Lincoln, and you can't vote against this. And they sat right in there and told him, says, oh, yes, we can.
Well, let's do this. Let's do this, Governor. I'd like, let's do a little bit of a reset for a moment. So you've told us about the days leading up to the speech you finally gave the day you introduced this. So let's go back. You've won election finally as governor in 98.
Yes.
Was it anywhere on your radar that you were going to work to change the Georgia flag? You didn't do it until 2001, but in any of those several years, was that on your agenda?
It was not. In fact, it was, I told the Kennedy Foundation folks this. I said, it was the last thing that I ever wanted to deal with because I'd seen what happened with Zell. But several things happened. You know, in that office as governor, you're exposed to a lot of things that's happened. And really, one of the things that happened in South Carolina. Governor Jim Hodges was governor over there, and they were dealing with it. It was over the Confederate battle flag was over the Capitol, and of course, you know, they moved it down to where they're trying to take it down now. And he invited me to come over and speak to the Jefferson Jackson Day dinner over there, and I did.
That's the big annual Democratic Party fundraiser that most Democratic organizations around the country have.
Yes, and so I did, and he had demonstrations everywhere. I mean, they were just on both sides. And I spoke to the J.J. dinner, and then I spent the night in the governor's mansion, and he was up all night. And he and I had conversations the next day. And then I got back, and we were big email friends, and he sent an email or told me, I can't remember, but he said, you cannot let this happen to your state. He says, it has completely paralyzed everything we're doing. Well, now, you know, South Carolina does not have a headquarters of a Fortune 500 company in its confines. We had 13 at the time. I believe we're up to 15 or 16 now. And the business folks came, or the CEOs came. And before I went over there to South Carolina, they came and to push me on the flag. And if you really want to know the truth, I pushed them out of the office. I mean, I fussed at them. I said, listen, I'm in the middle of education. I'm all this transportation stuff. I mean, you know. Don't come here.
You had at that point, there were some threats going on about boycotting the NCAA, removing the Final Four from Atlanta.
They'd written us a letter.
And I think, if I'm not wrong, Arthur Blank was the president of the Metro Chamber during that period, was he?
I think he was. I know that I remember Pete Correll came and told me Pete was, of course, president of Georgia Pacific
at the time.
And he said, we have three flagpoles out there, four flagpoles. We have one for the American flag, one for the Georgia flag, three flagpoles, and one for the company. He said, when I have foreign visitors, he said, many times I have to take the Georgia flag down. They don't understand how when they only see that flag being carried by skinheads, down in Berlin, how that we use it as a state symbol. And he says it's just a problem. And he says it's like South Africa was a problem for us. He said, you know, it was little small parts of our business, but at the shareholders meeting at Wall Street and everything else, it all became, what are y'all doing business with South Africa? And he said, this is getting the same way here. And Georgia Pacific, of course, was a homegrown Georgia company, now owned by the Koch brothers, by the way.
So what changed, Governor Burns?
After you get down to deciding that you've got to do this, that you're going to have to deal with it.
When did that? So we know that it was in January of 2001 that you finally revealed to all of us, and we'll get to that story because that's an amazing story, too. When did you actually start having active conversations, knowing you were going to introduce the flag bill?
In the fall of 2000, and I talked to my chief staff was Bobby Kahn, and
who is with us in the studio today.
I talked to Bobby.
Quieter than usual.
Quieter than usual. And it was just Bobby and me and the governor's office. And I told him, I said, we're going to change a flag. And he said, do you know what you're about to do? And I said, well, you know, I'm an optimist. I said, we go ahead, we can get over this. If we do it quickly and, you know, we can get over this and we'll have a year to repair before we have to run for, before I have to run for reelection. And he cautioned me. He says, you know, he said, now I agree with you, but he says, I just want to make sure you know what you're about to do here. And in fact, there's another story from Marie the night before.
Your wife, Marie
Burns.
Yeah,
Marie, yeah. The night before we did the bill, we had all the business folks. We didn't tell them anything until we had them at the governor's mansion that night. I had been down to the state, old state capitol, and I gave a speech. And I gave a speech in which I said, we must not, I was trying to give the legislature a little head notice. We must not repeat the mistakes that were made here.
This was in Milledgeville, Milledgeville, when you say the old capital.
Old state capital. We cannot repeat the mistakes that have been made here. This is where the ordinance of succession was passed. We can't have that again. We have to turn to the future and all that. Not one of them picked it up. The only ones that, the only one that picked it up was the chancellor. And he wrote, when I got back to the mansion, he'd written me an email and he said, what's up?
Who was it at that point?
It was Steve Porch. Steve Porch. And so he came. I told him, I said, come to the office in the morning. We'll tell you. And, of course, by the time he got there, he knew what was going on. But anyway, the night before, we had all the business folks out there, and they were shocked that we were we got him in there. Denmark Groover was there. He was spending the night with me. And Denny had been the one that had pushed it through in the 50s.
He had pushed through the 56
flag
change
he
that
had
created the flag with the Confederate battle.
And so his testimony was absolutely necessary.
Absolutely. And he came in, and I started talking to Denny, you know, late in the fall. And I said, Denny, and he was very ill then. And he later on died.
Within 3 months of the vote.
Yeah. Vote. Mm-hmm. And I told him, I said, Denny, you got to come clean with these folks. You got to tell what went on. Because he'd always said that it was not passed in protest of integration or anything. And he went to that rules committee, and he told them.
We're going to take a break right now. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation with former Governor Roy Barnes. It was recorded in June of 2015. Welcome back to Political Rewind. If you're just joining us, we're revisiting a conversation the AJC's Jim Galloway and I had with former Governor Roy Barnes in June of 2015. We talked to him about the fight he waged to remove the Confederate battle emblem from the state flag back in 2001. Our conversation took place just 2 weeks after the massacre at the Mother Emanuel AME Church in Charleston. The flag with the battle emblem on it was a creation of the Georgia legislature, not back in Reconstruction days, but in 1956. What were the circumstances that led to that?
This was 2 years after Brown versus Board of Education. Marvin Griffin, who's the governor then, had called for massive resistance to the order to desegregate schools, and the 56th legislature was tasked with enacting that resistance. You had a chairman named Democratic Party chairman named Bell. What was his first name?
I've forgotten his first name.
But he was one of the main instigators.
He went
of
on
this.
To be appointed to the Georgia Court of Appeals, and was chief judge of the Georgia Court of Appeals.
But the other part of this was that the Democratic National Committee had barred the Confederate battle emblem from the floor of the National Convention. This was a presidential year. So by putting that battle emblem on the flag, you could still wave it on the floor as a kind of a Dixiecrat protest.
So this, Governor Barnes, was passed as a symbol of defiance, and that's what you needed, Denmark Groover, to tell legislators.
And I went back. I did this, as I said, I'm a lawyer by training, so you take my proofs and everything else. One of the things we did also, went back and looked at the bills that were passed at that same session. As Jim said, it was the session of resistance. And the session, they had a bill in there to do away with any pension for any police officer that ever enforced integration. They had a authority to close the public schools. You just wouldn't believe the things. Now, interestingly enough, and remember, the flag we had before 56 is very similar to the one we have now, which was the first Confederate flag. It was called the Stars, and Bars, and this was called the Confederate Battle Flag. But anyway, the Daughters of the Confederacy had been against changing to the battle flag that we had.
Because the official flag of the CSA, the Confederate States of America, as you say, is similar to the one we have now. But you could perhaps accept a little bit more willingly the more formal flag of the Confederacy than the one that was specifically a battle flag.
This is where it gets very weird. The symbolism here gets very, very strange here, because what happened long before Zell Miller proposed changing the flag, you had Tyrone Brooks, a state house member from Atlanta, and he would introduce bill after bill after bill recommending trying to push a change back to the old Confederate symbol. And ultimately, the city of Atlanta even adopted that flag, unilaterally adopted that flag and started putting it in courtrooms.
Yeah.
And so when the time came to change the flag, remove the battle emblem, white legislators were referring to the old CSA flag as the black flag, and they could not vote for it.
Wow. It's
really convoluted.
That's one of the reasons. Now, Cecil Alexander had worked on the flag that we adopted.
Tell everybody who Cecil Alexander was.
Cecil Alexander was one of the great unsung heroes. I mean, he was really one of the ones of a titan in the greatest generation. But he was an architect who designed most of the big buildings in Atlanta. Had a wife that was killed by a drunk driver, and he became an advocate for tougher laws on drunk driving, and that's where I met him. And I talked to him, we became friends, and he had designed the new flag with the blue background and the state seal on it. And then I said, well, listen, let's be fair to the history of the state. And we put all of the former flags of the state, and the bottom is a historical. Now, my detractors called it a Denny's placemat.
Like a Denny's placemat.
I mean, and everything else. But, this is just, I can't believe that we're still arguing.
So let's talk. You had a meeting out at the mansion, and you had the legislative leader, this very small group of legislators who knew what you were planning to do. One Republican, the rest Democrat, and the Republican was Austin Scott,
who's now a member of Congress.
So, and you had the flag there to show them.
Yes.
You had a bill already sitting, I believe.
We had a bill that was germane in the Rules Committee that we could
do. So none of us who covered the Capitol, none of the lobbyists, none of the rest of the legislators who came to work on that Wednesday morning, January 24th, had Jim, we had no idea.
Well, some of us had inklings, because we did have somebody over at the speech in Milledgeville. But no, this was following the same old committee process. I think all that was out there was the Brooks bill,
yeah.
And we knew that wasn't going anywhere.
So here's this one of the most important historic pieces of legislation that would ever come before the Georgia legislature. Very quickly, my story is that I was walking in the third floor of the Capitol, my cell phone rang, and it was Bobby Kahn on the phone saying, sit down, hold on to your hat, we're going to change the Georgia flag, the bill is going to be introduced today, the governor will be on the floor of the House to introduce it himself, and we're going to make this happen in a matter of days, right? Is that your recollection?
Yes. And let me ask you, Governor, the big difference, I mean, the one constant between 93 and 2001, of course, was Tom Murphy. Mm-hmm. And it moved.
The Speaker of the House.
When Zell tried to change the flag, it didn't move. It couldn't move through that chamber. What was the difference?
Well, there's several things. Remember, I had a very close personal relationship with Murphy because he was a lawyer and I was always out there in his courts and where he practiced. And his son and I had gone to law school together. And I told him about a week before, and he told me, he says, you're making a terrible mistake. And I told him, I said, I have to deal with it, Mr. Speaker. And then he told me, I said, this is what I asked you. Stay out of the way. Let me do it. And I said, if I fail, I fail. And then he told me, he said, all right, I'll stay out of your way. But don't count on me to cast, if it's tied, to cast the deciding vote. And I said, fair enough.
You did something remarkable. You passed that bill that day in the House.
Yes, you did.
Before we talk about that, though, I was in the media box on the day that you gave that speech. Jim, were you there? Do you remember?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
I will tell you that just from my personal point of view, I feel as though I saw one of the greatest speeches ever given at the General Assembly when I watched you give that speech. It certainly was every bit, if not more, historic than the speech of Zell Miller.
Because it worked.
It
succeeded. But it also, one reason that it was able to move that fast, Calvin Smyrie was the chairman of the House Rules Committee.
Well, let's get to that in a sec. But before we do, let's hear just a little bit of that speech. But at one point in your speech, you did something that I think struck many of us as an awfully brave acknowledgement. You talked about what happened when you were a young legislator, and the King holiday vote came up in the legislature to make MLK Day a holiday here in Georgia. You voted against it.
I voted. Well, Bobby said I voted yay, nay, and I won't say. I voted against it, and then it came back, and I voted for it. It caught so much hell in the at home, and then, or maybe I didn't vote at all the first time. But anyway, I considered it a vote against.
And so you came before the House and acknowledged that it was one of the biggest mistakes you'd ever made.
It was. It was a mistake. I knew it within a year. I talked to Ms. King about it. But I was determined, and I'd always said this, and you know, politics has never been, nobody believes this, but business and law and all that has really been my life. Politics is just something that I always thought you should do. You should give back.
Well, let's listen just to a brief section of that part of the speech.
There is not a day that goes by that I do not regret that vote. Fortunately, there were enough leaders in this General Assembly then with the wisdom and the fortitude that I lacked as a young legislator. Don't make my mistake. Each of you knows the right thing to do. You know it in your heart. You know it in your mind. You know it in your conscience. And in the end, that really is all that matters. When the dust settles and controversy fades, and I promise you, it will rapidly. Will history record you as just another politician or as a person of conscience? Make no mistake, just as with me and a vote 20 years ago, history will make a judgment. Using race to win leaves ashes in the mouths of the victors.
It was an incredibly powerful speech. And I'm wondering about something. You are an accomplished speaker. You've been getting up in front of audiences for years. This probably was could have been easily the most important speech you'd ever give. Do you remember how you walked into the House that day? Stood there? Do you remember your emotions? Were you nervous? Were you certain in what you were going to say?
Well, I generally don't get nervous at anything about speaking, but you know, I was anxious. They took a picture, as they always do when the governor comes into the House, and we were coming in, and Bobby later renamed it Dead Man Walking. But, you know, I was anxious, but I knew, you know, I believe this. I tell lawyers, young lawyers, I said, you can't try a case that you don't have the belief in. You've got to have, if you're going to do the best case, you've got to have the passion to be able to explain it to a jury. And I knew this was long overdue. And
do you remember what you said to Marie?
I remember what I said to Marie the night before, after we finished all the meeting downstairs in the governor's mansion. She was upstairs and reading in bed, and I sat on the side of the bed, and she says, well, tell me about it. I said, in 2 years, I'm going to be defeated. And she said, I'm ready to leave tonight.
Really? You were certain that this could end your political career, which some people think it did do, although there might be other factors.
Well, there's always other factors. There's changing demographics and other things. But I think I would have withstood anything else. You know, I had very good favorable numbers. We had been very aggressive in a lot of things we were doing. But, yes, I knew that I was running a big risk. I was an optimist. I believed that it would fade, just like I said, quickly, and that we would move on. But it didn't fade. I mean, you know, I had demonstrations everywhere I went.
Yeah. Jim,
the flaggers came out.
The flaggers came out in huge numbers, Jim. Yeah. We recall that, and they dogged him throughout his reelection campaign. But before we get to that, you know, it's interesting. Zell Miller and Roy Barnes both alluded to a similar theme in their speeches on the flag. We didn't play those portions in the show today, but both of them referred to their ancestors who fought in the Civil War, and in both cases were captured at one point.
Oh, the debate that accompanied this, both in the House and the Senate, was just fascinating because you couldn't take the well without kind of displaying your genealogy. It just kind of hung it out there like a clothesline. I mean, either you were a son or a daughter, a grandson, granddaughter, a slave, or a Confederate veteran. It was one of the more fascinating episodes I've ever witnessed.
Well, you did have an ancestor who fought. Tell us about him.
Well, it was my grandfather's father, my great grandfather. His name was Corbin Barnes. He fought in for the Confederacy, for the Gilmer Tigers, is what they call them. He was captured at Vicksburg, and you know Grant captured so many at Vicksburg he didn't know what to do with them, so he paroled them all if they'd take an oath of allegiance to the United States. So my great grandfather, as many of them did, took an oath of allegiance and came home in 1864. Now what I didn't tell the General Assembly was in those mountains, you know, it was very divided up there. Union County, it's not called Union County because of the AFL-CIO, and so there were as many Georgians that fought for the Union in the Army of the Tennessee, in the Union Army of the Tennessee, as there was in the Confederate Army.
In fact, the current House Speaker, David Ralston, his people voted fought on the Union side.
Fought on the U.S. side, and of course we were from those mountain folks up there, and my great grandfather on my grandmother's side fought for the Union. And so I had one for the Union, one for the Confederacy. It was so poor up there, they didn't have slaves, you know. But it was very divided up there. And after the Civil War, you know, there was a lot of revisionist history on the Civil War. It started with Jefferson Davis, who wrote a two-volume said that I've read, that's the driest thing on the face of the earth, called The Rise and Fall of the Confederate Government. And he tried to say that the Civil War was not fought over slavery, which is absolutely ridiculous. I read all these comments, but not fought over slavery. I have not read one ordinance of secession that ever said, we're seceding from the Union because we don't like the American tariffs. I mean, you know, it was all fought on slavery and the right
so,
to hold slaves.
One of the things that your strategy depended upon was a surprise, and not allowing momentum against you to build, because you recognized that if too much time passed, those flaggers who eventually caught up with you when you were back out running for re-election, they were going to overwhelm the Capitol with their objections. So you accomplished the first part. You got the bill passed in the House almost immediately.
That day.
Bobby Kahn tells me that the strategy was to get it on the Senate floor on Friday.
Yes.
There would not be a weekend to allow this thing to build.
That's right.
Jim, that didn't happen. They couldn't get it on the floor of the Senate on Friday.
They have more laborious rules in the Senate than the House does.
Well, and was it?
I had several heated conversations about that with the lieutenant governor and with the clerk. But
about not getting it on the floor immediately.
With the secretary, yeah.
So I think a lot of us, Jim, we knew at that point the strategy was to try to pass it that week.
But with no changes whatsoever.
Right.
With no
so changes. There wouldn't have back. To be a conference committee with the House.
Absolutely.
Yet. So I think there were a lot of us who observed this who thought, uh-oh, the weekend's coming up. This bill may be in more trouble than the Barnes folks, including Bobby Kahn, liked us to believe on Wednesday afternoon after it passed the House. Were you nervous?
I was concerned when it didn't pass that first week. And we did start having, folks showing up in Confederate uniforms and everything else. I've got to tell this one little story, and then I'll hush. But I went to leave, and I had a trooper that was one of my bodyguards by the name of Big Mike Fortson.
What was his name?
Fortson, Mike Fortson, huge guy. He's African-American. So anyway, I was leaving one night, and there was one of those Confederate reenactors there in the rotunda right out, and here he come running as soon as he saw me. You know, you destroyed my heritage. You stole my heritage and everything. And Mike says, let's go, Governor. And I said, no, I let him have his say. So I listened to him, and when he finished, I looked at him, and I said, let me ask you a question. I said, when y'all reenact those battles, do we still get the hell beat out of us? And, of course, he shuddered off, and we went all, but Mike laughed all the way back to the mansion.
But on a serious note, I've never asked you this before, but I've got to believe that you were the recipient of death threats during that period.
Well, Bobby and them kept all that stuff, you know, and it wasn't pleasant. Let me just put it that way. You know, even after I was defeated, Allison got married out there at the mansion. They
your daughter.
Yeah.
One of them.
Yes. They picketed that. And even after I got beat and we were having, you know, see you, goodbye, and it's been nice, they were still there.
Let's take another break. More with former Governor Barnes in a moment. Let's get back to our conversation with former Governor Roy Barnes. We talked to him in the summer of 2015 about how he won his battle to remove the Confederate battle emblem from the state flag. So let's talk about that. You obviously did pass this bill, and you did change the flag. To what extent do you think personally, because this has been debated for a long time, some people immediately say Roy Barnes lost re-election because of the flag. Others say, well, the flag was certainly one of the major factors, but there were other factors. Teachers, you had to make an apology to teachers because they felt you'd handle them roughly as you tried to do your education.
There was the Northern Arc in there, too.
Northern Arc was in there.
But how much?
I don't think I would have been defeated had it not been for the flag. And the reason is, just look what's happened. If teachers were going to get up in arms, they've had their, they didn't get a raise for 7 or 8 years. They've had their class sizes doubled in some times. And, you know, why didn't they get mad about that and beat an incumbent? They didn't. Yes, they groused about it, but and objected, but it would not have been sufficient. And I don't think the Northern Arc, remember, they were split. Most everybody wanted the Northern Arc except for Scythe County and Cumming. Well, no Republican, I mean, no Democrat was going to take that county anyway. But as I was sitting in traffic the other day, I'd like to have gotten on it to get home. But anyway, the I attribute to the flag. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Listen, you know, I had boys that generally went deer hunting on election day that made sure that they went and voted against me before they went deer hunting. Yeah. And I don't think there's any question about that. The unfortunate thing that I see about this whole experience is that, you know, it's the third rail in Southern politics is race, maybe the national third rail. And we don't seem to have learned anything. We don't seem, I mean, we go through, for example, we went through all this voter ID. Oh, we got to cut out these folks that are falsely voting, you know, which means all these blacks. Even though the Washington Post did a study that showed that out of 1 billion votes cast, there'd only been 30, since 2000, there's only been 31 that had been in-face hand to do. That's a racial thing. Mm-hmm. The thing where, you know, it's a welfare queen, we got to cut out all these welfare. They don't ever think about a white welfare queen, even though 62% of all food stamps are taken by whites. I mean, this horrific killing in Charleston. I mean, and this kid, I can only imagine what kind of family he came from. And we now know that, you know, he was just obsessed with all of these racial things, and the Confederate battle flag was the emblem that he immediately went to do it. It's made everybody just sick about it, and particularly in a church. And he said himself, they treated me so nicely.
Yeah.
And, you know, I almost didn't kill them all. So I think that that's the dynamic. And, you know, I am a big believer that, and I'm an optimist, and I think that as younger folks come along, they're going to look back and say, you know, why did they get into this? When I talked to legislators, is when I told that day, trying to get a vote, I brought him in and I told him, I said, you know, in a few years, you're going to have a grandchild that's going to be doing a term paper on the change of the flag. Mm-hmm. What are you going to tell that grandchild? But the message I'd have for the Republican Party was, you got to change your rhetoric, too.
Yeah.
You got to change your rhetoric that all welfare queens are black and that all, because the truth of the matter, Medicaid's the largest welfare program we have. And it's 80% of it in Georgia goes to nursing homes.
Governor, you've been very circumspect. You've been relatively circumspect in not criticizing successors of yours.
And I'm not going to do it now.
Well, but you do have one symbol of the Confederate battle flag that remains here, and that's on the license plate that the Confederate veterans were able to get the state to issue. And you have Governor Deal now saying that he's going to remove the larger image of the battle flag, but it'll still have that smaller square that has the battle flag. Given that around the South, other governors and political leaders are retreating from the Confederate battle flag, does that surprise you at all?
Well, I think Governor Deal is on the right track. And remember, a lot of those things that we did, I think I even voted for that bill because it was part of a compromise that on some things that we were trying to do that same year, or I signed it, you know, one of the others, because there is a place for the Confederate battle flag. It is in museums, and it is at Confederate cemeteries, and it is places like that. But it is not as a symbol of the state, and I don't think it ought to be on the tag at all. And I think that Governor Deal is feeling his way through this. He's a very cautious fellow, which is good in politics. And, you know, I personally like Governor Deal. I mean, we served in the Senate together. And I think that as he feels his way through this, he'll come to the same conclusion.
I will tell you, to a certain degree, I think you need to have some Confederate symbolism out there.
Yeah.
And, one of the more, before all this happened, before the shooting in Charleston, one of the most interesting things that was kind of on my mind was John Lewis.
Yeah.
You have a debate in Alabama over whether to change the name of the Edmund Pettus Bridge, that where he was beaten close to his close to death. And Lewis said, no, you can't change that. Because that has to be out there. Edmund Pettus was a KKK leader
and a United States senator.
Right. Yes, yes. And he says, no, you can't change that because that's part of the story of Selma now.
It is, and you know, Stone Mountain was created as a Confederate, you know, memorial. That's the reason you have, you know, Lee and Jackson and all is called the Southern Mount Rushmore. But it's there. There's a difference in saying, all right, this is part of our history, and it should be balanced, and it should be balanced that it was wrong what we did.
So we're about out of time. I want to conclude, though, by asking you just two questions. One of them is, that night that you did, in fact, look at the boxes, the precincts coming back in, realizing as you did the numbers that there just weren't enough votes for you to beat Sonny Perdue, you had to reflect that night on what changing the flag had meant to your personal political career and what it meant to the state of Georgia.
Yeah, I did, but I don't believe in tearing about things. I did it. It was the right thing to do. I'd do it again. Now, and this is another thing I think politicians miss. We don't own these offices. If I had to get beat to do this, so what? I mean, you know, we go back to our normal lives. I mean, the American system is you reach down and take from an everyday person and you make them a leader of the state, of the nation, and you expect them to do their duty because from whence you were brought is where you're going back. And so, you know, I would like to have served another term. People didn't think so, and, you know, I accept their judgment. Was the flag the cause of it? I believe so. I think that, as I've articulated, I think it was the cause. But so what?
Well, and that is the second part of the question. It led to your defeat, but you're saying you took away from it that you accomplished something that really mattered.
Yes, I did. And, you know, I thought we had a very full administration, but I'm proud that I didn't make the same mistake as I did as a young legislator. And I was determined after that I was not going to worry if I ever got elected governor when a matter of conscience came along that I was going to try to do the right thing. And I think I did.
Jim, in the long run, Governor Barnes leaves a positive impact on this state?
I can. I don't want to for a long, long time, but I can write the lead of his obituary right now.
Yeah.
It will be Roy Barnes, the man who took down the battle emblem from the state flag.
Jim Galloway, I'm really glad you could be here for this conversation today because you were part of the history of all of this. And Governor Roy Barnes, it's just as I said when we started, it's a real honor and a pleasure to have you here to talk about one of the most important stories that any of us in the South could have watched unfold when you changed the Georgia flag. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Roy Barnes may have lost re-election, but there was an important consolation prize. In 2003, the John F. Kennedy Presidential Library named him a recipient of their prestigious Profiles in Courage Award because of his commitment to removing the Confederate emblem from the state flag. But the Barnes flag lived for a relatively short period of time. During the election of 2002, his opponent, Sonny Perdue, made the flag an issue and promised that if elected governor, he'd hold a referendum to allow Georgians to vote on the flag of their choice. When Perdue won, he did change the Barnes flag and put in place the one that still flies today. We're just about out of time for today's show. We're going to take a break on Monday to celebrate Labor Day, but we'll be back with our live show on Wednesday at 2. And as September gets underway, we have a lot to talk about. Congress will be back in session later next week. They have a full agenda of tax and spending measures to take up, and the already complicated negotiations around those issues will be made even trickier as they decide on how to pay for what promises to be a multi-billion dollar relief package for coastal Texas. And of course, the unpredictability of President Trump could make matters even more difficult. Our senior producer is Jenny Ament. Olivia Rheingold is our associate producer. Our engineer is Tyler Morris. I'm Bill Nygut. Thanks for listening. Have a great holiday weekend. See you again next Wednesday at 2 for another Political Rewind.